We had a magnitude 5.9, 10 miles south of Indios, Puerto Rico.
At least 300 people, including lots of children, are living in a tent city in the earthquake-damaged Guayanilla. There's very little left of where they once lived.
One of the people I interviewed was an 80-year-old woman named Lupita Martinez, who is outside a shelter in the southwest coastal town of Guanica. She was sitting in a white plastic chair next to her husband, who's 96 years old, in a makeshift bed next to her. She kept trying to get a hold of their caretaker. You know, she couldn't find her. You know, her husband is not doing well physically. And they were trying to figure out if they could get to a hospital. There's hundreds of people sleeping in shelters, streets, cars. They're terrified of another strong earthquake.
Hurricane comes in, it goes through. This is staying with us. Every time the ground shakes, there's and rightfully so, a lot of concern and fear. And at some points, we kind of have to start over from ground zero again.
You do have convergence between the Caribbean plate and the North American plate. And the island is being squeezed in between the two of those plates at the same time, which results in pressure buildup. And ultimately, that pressure has to be released at some point.
I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. On Saturday morning, a 5.9 magnitude earthquake shook Puerto Rico, leaving behind a path of destruction along the island's southern coast. That was reporting from the AP's Danica Cotto. The quake is just the latest seismic activity to rattle the island in recent weeks. Last Tuesday, a 6.4 magnitude earthquake struck the same area, killing one person and injuring nine others. It was the most powerful earthquake to hit Puerto Rico in more than a century, and it knocked out electricity across most of the island and destroyed hundreds of homes, as well as several schools and businesses. In the weeks leading up to these powerful earthquakes, more than 2,000 smaller quakes occurred around the island. After Tuesday's earthquake, Puerto Rican Governor Wanda Vasquez estimated $110 million in damages. But that figure doesn't account for the heavy emotional and mental toll these earthquakes are having on the lives of Puerto Ricans. At the same time, the island is also struggling to recover from the devastation of Hurricane Maria in 2017, as well as the political and economic turmoil that's rocked the island over the past few years. Here with me now from Puerto Rico is David Begno, lead national correspondent for CBS This Morning. David, great to have you back on the show.
You bet, Tanzina.
David, you've been reporting from the island for the past week. Tell us how Saturday's earthquake compared to the 6.4 earthquake that hit the island on Tuesday.
So most of the people told us they felt Saturday's earthquake was stronger and definitely lasted longer than Tuesday. I wasn't here for Tuesday's, but I can tell you I was in a hotel room on Saturday, and it wasn't swaying from right to left. It was an up and down type of motion. I was on the 10th story of a hotel, and I have to tell you, I started counting. And when I got to 10 seconds, I stopped counting, and I started trying to figure out where I was going to go. And I thought, do you go down the stairs? Because I don't want to get stuck in an elevator. Do I go out on the balcony? I, as much as I report what experts say you should do, I was sort of paralyzed in the moment. And so too were people around the island.
That's what I was going to ask you. I mean, what there doesn't seem to be, Puerto Rico, as we know, is not prepared generally for earthquakes. When you go around the island and talk to residents, what's the fear like?
The fear is mentally paralyzing for them. In fact, I have to tell you, we called each of the mayors in five of the hardest hit municipalities yesterday, and they told us they had no more than 50 to 60 homes that were damaged, a few dozen that were destroyed. The thousands of people who are living outside right now are doing so by their own choice, not necessarily because their home is uninhabitable, but it's because they feel safer outside than they do under their own roof.
Are you seeing structural damage across the island, David? And if so, what kind?
Oh, certainly. Look, you have homes that are flattened. I mean, like I'm talking about, it looks as though it imploded and it's a pancake and the roof is sitting on the cement below. But there are other homes that are cracked. And some pretty giant cracks, like floor to ceiling. I've been with people for the last 72 hours who are in their home with cracks. There was another aftershock and they come running out. Listen, I want everybody listening to understand this and try and walk in the shoes of the people here. Since December 29th, they have felt the earth shake, usually a few times a day. Imagine going through that. It's like one lady said to me, a hurricane, I know when it's coming. An earthquake, I have no clue. And that's why we just left a family sitting on the top of a mountain. in Guanica, more than 100 people who left their homes at the base of the mountain and went to the top because they feel safer there. And I asked a man who was sitting in a wheelchair. He's a cancer survivor. He's got sleep apnea. He's overweight. And he's there with his entire family. I mean, they have a kitchen that they set up. I said, how long are you going to be here? He said, weeks, months. He said, I don't know.
David, are people seeking to stay in shelters? I know you mentioned there are lots of people sleeping outside, but are they even attempting, or are there shelters available for them right now?
There are government shelters. I'm looking at one in Guanica right now that has been set up by the National Guard. It's essentially a tent city, if you will. And there are some areas of the tent that are air conditioned. The Associated Press is reporting that about 4,000 people have gone to sleep inside shelters set up by the National Guard in the affected municipalities. But there are more people, more than 4,000, I would tell you from my reporting, who are sleeping outside in their car, on their front lawn, and at the top of the mountain.
Are there any plans to relocate evacuees to other parts of the island that haven't been as affected by the earthquake?
Yeah, good question. It's the same question a lot of people have had. I took that question to the governor of Puerto Rico yesterday, and here's what she essentially said. We've talked about it, but we're not going to do it. And her explanation as to why is she thinks this is better handled at a local level by the mayors, supported by the central government. And she claims that a lot of people would not want to leave. Hard to prove whether or not that's true. That's the rationale as of right now. But essentially, you know, FEMA was saying, but we leave the door open depending on should there be another damaging quake.
Well, but Wanda Vasquez, the governor, said that she had signed a request for, quote, major disaster declaration from the U.S. government at the same time. Where does that stand, David? And what are folks saying to you about how the Puerto Rican government, at least, is handling this so far?
Okay, so number one, everyone here is waiting to see if the president signs the major disaster declaration. Mr. Trump signed an emergency disaster declaration, which allowed for FEMA to help with life-sustaining things, food, water, cots, nothing more, okay? Now, the major disaster declaration, if the president signs it, and I say if, not to be insulting to the president, but because the president has been vocal in saying he thinks there's a lot of corruption on the island, he thinks they don't need more money, and they've gotten enough of it after Maria. Of course, this is not Maria, this is an earthquake. So it does have people wondering, will Mr. Trump sign it? FEMA thought that he might have signed it the day she requested it on Saturday. It hasn't happened yet. So number one, they're waiting to see if that happens. If it does, Tanzina, that would help with things like temporary housing, putting people in other shelters, maybe hotel rooms. But remember, this is not the States. You don't have tons of hotels all over the place. So if you start bringing people to San Juan and put them in hotels, there's a limited number of hotels. That's number one. Number two, people here have a profound distrust of the government. So we saw the mountain communities, the roads jam-packed yesterday. I'm talking bumper to bumper where the backup was like an hour. And most of the backup were local folks who were coming from other areas with supplies that they had picked up that they were delivering themselves. Now, the governor said yesterday, please, y'all are causing a traffic jam. Distribute it to your local officials and they'll give it out. And the people I've heard from have said, oh, no, no, no. I don't trust you. I'm not giving you anything. You let us down during Maria. I don't believe that you're going to be here now. Sorry, we're going ourselves to do it.
At the same time, Puerto Rico is still waiting to receive more than $18 billion in federal funding in relief from Hurricane Maria a few years ago. Do we know what the Trump administration has said about that? Or, I mean, because President Trump hasn't really acknowledged these earthquakes at all, as far as we know publicly.
President Clinton has sent out a tweet regarding Puerto Rico, has retweeted a tweet regarding Puerto Rico, and President Obama has. I do not believe we've heard or seen anything from Mr. Trump thus far, and I am not aware of where the money issue stands.
What are people saying? You know, this is coming on the heels, David, as you know. You've been covering what's been happening on the island for quite some time. This is coming on the heels of an economic crisis that the island faced, then Hurricane Maria, then the ouster of Ricardo Rosselló, the governor, this past summer, and now this series of earthquakes. What are people telling you about whether or not they want to stay on the island? I mean, we've seen a migration out of Puerto Rico over the past few years. Should we expect more of that in the aftermath of these quakes?
I got a message from a 27-year-old teacher this morning who lives in Sabana Grande, which read, quote, we are tired. after Maria, after the summer of 19, people are finally breaking away from this strange, dormant state we were in for almost a century, close quote. Listen, there has been a migration to the States, but there's a lot of people, Tanzina, who still want to stay and will stay. And I'm not talking about parents and grandparents. I'm talking about young people. I'm talking about college students who are fighting for a better classroom that's not as damaged and consistently has electricity because they don't want to leave their island. And you have a lot of people in the States who want to come back to the island. I can't tell you I've heard anybody within last week talk about leaving. This is not the same as we saw after Maria. However, there has been some video of the airport being quite packed. And I've heard from people. I heard from a lady yesterday who messaged me and said, David, I'm trying to evacuate my father from Ponce. He's going to fly out in 5 days. United Airlines is not waiving the fee to help us get him out faster. Is there anything you can do? So I reached out to United. Listen, arguably reporters shouldn't be that involved. But at the end of the day, when you're dealing with people who don't have power, who don't have water, who are desperate to get out, you just do what feels human. Now, let me update those numbers. Regarding the power and electricity, we're hearing from officials on the island that both are at about 98%. That sounds great, right? Because there's 3.5 million people who live here. You should know that there's only about 1.3 million water customers. So more than half they're not a customer of the water utility system. And only half the population here is an electricity customer. Okay, so there's a whole lot of people without either, but they weren't. It has nothing to do with the earthquakes. And the people who do have power, Tanzina, it goes out daily. So you got it at 8, you lose it at 2. Is it to blame just on the earthquakes? No, they have a dilapidated power grid, and it was that way even before Maria. But the earthquakes have damaged it. In fact, the Costa Sur power plant on the southern part of the island along the coast, which is responsible for about 25% of the island's generation right now, is not generating anything. And it was evacuated for the safety of the workers, so they're using a private power plant to try and generate some of that electricity. So bottom line, the power just goes off and on. So to say that, oh, everybody has it, sounds good, until you realize that it's exceptionally unreliable.
David Begno, you've been covering this story for quite some time, and I know people on the island really appreciate that. David Begno, lead national correspondent for CBS This Morning. Thanks always for joining us.
I thank you.
We're going to focus in now on the mental health impacts of disasters like the earthquakes in Puerto Rico. Joining me to discuss is Rosaura Ornego Aguayo, an assistant professor and clinical psychologist at the Medical University of South Carolina. And her research focuses on the psychological aftermath of natural disasters like Hurricane Maria. Rosaura, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So you're working closely with mental health providers who are in Puerto Rico right now. What are you hearing about how people are responding to the latest disaster?
So what I'm hearing from boots on the ground is there's a lot of obvious basic needs that haven't been met. Children sleeping with shoes on, lots of panic attacks, especially at night, lots of just hopelessness and a sense of general fear. And unlike Maria, what they're observing and telling me is that there's no endpoint yet, and this is new. So lots of anxiety across children and parents.
I mean, we've heard from folks who say, you know, we can predict more or less when a hurricane is about to hit, but this is much more unpredictable. And it's also relatively new. Puerto Rico has not had earthquakes in about a century. So is that part of where this is coming from? Or is this compounded trauma from Hurricane Maria and the political instability on the island, and now this series of earthquakes?
So unlike hurricanes, where it's accompanied by a season, right, from the fall, there's no predictability to an earthquake. Puerto Ricans are used to natural disasters that have a beginning, middle, and end, like hurricanes, as terrible as it can be. These aftershocks, and sometimes of increase or equal magnitude, are very terrifying. So add that compounded trauma of a devastating island-wide hurricane in 2017, political unrest, on and off power and water, all of this combined. So it's not just an earthquake, it's a compilation.
Getting ambulances to people who have been affected by the earthquake has been a challenge. And we saw a lot of these challenges with just the healthcare infrastructure after Hurricane Maria. What does the mental health infrastructure look like in Puerto Rico right now?
Maria kind of revealed how fragile the mental health infrastructure of Puerto Rico was. However, Maria brought a gift. which was an awakened interest in the importance of training mental health providers on the islands to deliver evidence-based trauma-focused care. So for the past 2 years, many agencies have been building local capacity on the island. However, there's still much, much help that is needed.
Mental health is one of those things that's much more difficult to discern, I think, because it's not the same as having, say, a broken leg, right? So how are people identifying those who are in need of trauma services right now?
Just as we have first aid responders, we have what's called psychological first aid. So these social workers, psychologists, volunteers that are trained are going on the ground and talking to families, assessing basic needs. And while they're doing that assessment, they observe for certain things such as desperation, fear, several days without sleep, or even stomach pains or nervousness or anxiety. And then they triage and refer those that need immediate crisis assistance to, you know, the BAS hotline or APS community health care clinics that have been open in every single town that has been affected. The interesting thing here is I think we're more equipped to handle those immediate crises. It's the aftermath that's a problem. So if we're continuing to see specifically in children these symptoms of irritability, lack of sleep, panic attacks, wetting the bed, anxiety of leaving their caregivers, not wanting to go to school, that's when these kids really need a referral to a specialist that is trained in trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy.
And Arsawada, what about in adults? I guess what are the predictors of resiliency in adults right here when it comes to dealing with these types of disasters?
Resiliency in adults looks a lot like these are adults that immediately seek social support. Doesn't mean you're less stressed, but it means that you're being active. You're seeking the help that your children need. You're hydrating. You're trying to eat. You're having healthy conversations with your children and honest conversations about what happened as a family. And you try to maintain your routine as much as you can. All these are predictors of resiliency in adults. We really need to send a message out there. Moms, dads, you need to take care of yourself, because if you don't put your oxygen mask, your kids are not going to be able to put on theirs.
Rosaura Ornego Aguayo is an assistant professor and clinical psychologist at the Medical University of South Carolina. Rosaura, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.